I love nice days in Annapolis. It's
next week's going to be a different story.
How dare you?
But I'll be in Tejas.
I also will be out of here, so I'll be in Florida. Welcome aboard the Funny Boat Podcast. I am your host and spoiled brat.
No kidding.
Captain Boomies. This furry-faced critter over here is the broker with the beard.
Yeah.
And today, interestingly, I've thrown in another broker.
I know.
I'm outnumbered today, and it's gross.
You
it's
like
a two
it.
For one deal.
You can shoot in any direction and hit somebody you don't want.
Because, you know, I mean, okay, I kid, of course, except that everybody hates boat brokers, so, you know.
Yeah.
Justified.
Yeah.
Self-loathing. I get it.
But Ian happens to be my third favorite boat broker.
Oh, okay.
You're in the running.
I'm in the fourth. Not, am I fourth now?
Hey, at least it's a podium place. You know? We're not quite in participation trophy territory yet, so
right.
I'm good for that.
Ian, would you mind telling folks your full name and where you work?
Yes, my name is Ian Dimka. I am a sales professional at Chesapeake Yacht Center in Baltimore, Maryland. We specialize in new and pre-owned yachts. We have a dealership of five different brands, and we focus on doing high-end white glove yacht concierge sales and service.
Ooh. They do it upright. So I got to run into Ian at the Miami Boat Show and take advantage of their full spread of gloriousness, because their clients are like, they expect that.
Nice. and you were happy to.
And I was happy to pretend.
Test out the waters over there.
We roll out the red carpet for everybody.
You know, so. Even me. No, it was really cool getting to see you there. I love seeing friendly faces when I go to the shows. And in particular, though, I was this close to not checking out some of the yachts that you guys had on display. And I'm so glad that you convinced me to do it, because I wasn't expecting those new boats to be laid out in the way that they were. Like, normally you've seen one yacht, you've seen them all. And I can be jaded like that because I've probably seen, I probably see 100 different yachts a year. But this, you've got some new stuff going on. How are people reacting to your fancy newness?
Well, it's been pretty interesting, actually. There's, you know, especially on the Prestige line, they've been doing several different models. You know, they've always focused on just the regular monohull flybridge yachts, and they've done some coupe yachts, which they're actually not doing anymore. But they're starting out with a PowerCat line. They've got like a 50 and a 65.
Whoa.
Oh,
man. Where are people going to put those? They're so wide.
On a mooring buoy.
Oh.
Or on a T-head.
Do we have any of those around here?
I mean, we've got some. Well, like our office in Baltimore, like they just did a complete renovation and redid all the docks. And like where at the old marina, there were finger piers on each side of the slips, right? But after redoing it, every slip in the marina, finger piers only on one side of the slip. Yeah, so, you know, people were a little perturbed by that, some of the old hats, because you got to now do got to do special time to get it tied up. But primarily, it's meant to be able to facilitate getting cats in there. Because, you know, if somebody's got a catamaran, they can now fit in the slip of the marina. They don't got to stick themselves on a T-head or stuff like that. So it's going to start getting a little bit. Place it's going to start changing a little bit. Like Chesapeake Yacht Club down in Deal, they just redid.
Yep.
They're redoing all their docks, and they specifically built like a dozen or so, if not more, slips that are specifically to be able to accommodate catamarans. So
they did a really nice job.
Yeah,
with awesome, that whole
awesome
setup.
Docks.
Yeah,
yeah, they're doing really good. So they're doing that, and then they've got like the one you walked on, like the X line. That's a different, it's kind of like a crossover between a monohull and the catamarans. It's a monohull, but they do some funky stuff with the layout to add more square footage. So, you know, like on the X60, you basically get the size of a 75, 80 foot monohull.
It was ridiculous. So you walk on board, and the first thing I notice is that how they have taken up so much more space for the main salon.
Mm-hmm.
And then they moved everything around in a way that they put the galley in a place that makes so much more sense to me than where they normally put the galley. So normally they shove the galley in a place that's like, it's probably good for entertaining, and yet somebody then gets stuck being in the galley while everybody's partying.
Yeah. Right. Well, like all the modern yachts, like Prestige was one of the first people to put the galley back.
Mm-hmm.
So like to go even further back, we're talking about like early 2000s and stuff like that. You look at any of the type of motor yachts, like European style motor yachts, not like a C-Race sedan bridge or anything like that, but like an Azimut or a Princess or things like that. They were all like, you know, you had your cockpit and then you had an entryway into the salon, and it was a big opening sliding door. So it was kind of a united space, you know, in the original conceptions of that. And then they throw the galley forward, but the galley would usually be like down a couple of steps.
Yeah.
It'd be like in a cave.
It was hidden.
Yeah. And that was just the way it was always done.
Right.
But it kind of sucked because if somebody was cooking or playing bartender, like they weren't hanging out. So one of the things that Prestige did, and a lot of, you know, basically all the manufacturers now have kind of copied it, was they took the galley up, made it same level, and put it in the back, so that when somebody's playing bartender or playing chef, people hanging in the cockpit, they can still be part of it. People hanging out in the salon, they can still be part of it.
Right.
They're not like down in the cave. And now that's kind of turned a little old hat because everybody's doing it. So what they did with the X line, they moved it back forward. So like you said, somebody doesn't have to get stuck playing bartender while everybody's hanging out.
Because they still have like a wet bar out back.
Yeah. Yeah, it's still back there. Like, so you can still do stuff like that, but it's still up. So if somebody's like cooking a meal or something, then you can still hang out with the family and stuff and do that kind of thing.
Here's why it made so much sense, because now let's say you are underway. Whoever's behind the helm is still part of the whole experience because they've put the galley basically directly behind them.
Mm-hmm.
So now somebody's going to be interacting with you at least a little bit because they need to get a water or a cocktail or some snacks.
And they've gotten that whole concept where, you know, uniting the outdoor space in the cockpit and the indoor space in the salon and really making it one space, very interchangeable.
Yeah.
So, you know, the whole conflict, you open the doors up, and if somebody wants to be inside watching TV, they can be inside watching TV. And if somebody's having a drink out in the back looking at the water, they can look at the back of the water, and they're still kind of in the same place.
Okay.
So
I want to back up, though, and talk about the fact that, like, I totally could never afford one of these boats. But you're dealing with people who can. And once upon a time, I used to deal with those people, too. What is there an intimidation factor? Is there any kind of, I don't know how much money you make, but I imagine it's a lot when you sell one of these boats.
It's not as much as you think.
Yeah, I know.
But, you know, Prestige needs to give us some more discount money so I can take advantage of it. But, I will say when I first started it, because I've been doing this for about 11 years now.
That's a good long time.
And I wasn't doing anything like this before. I was coaching high school football and bartending downtown.
What?
Yeah. Oh, it's the exact same thing.
Exactly. 100%. 100% the same thing.
Sweat.
Honestly, it's funny. Like when I first started, I worked at a dealer down in Jabins when I first started, and I was bartending downtown at a wine bar, and one of my regulars was a broker, and like that's how I got in. Like they got bought, they started expanding the powerboat side. There was one powerboat broker at the company, so the owners of the company were like, poof, you're now general manager of our burgeoning powerboat division.
All right.
Go hire some brokers and make stuff work.
So he went out and got all the bartenders.
Yeah.
Smart.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, you can talk to people.
Yeah,
you can,
absolutely.
You can have those kinds of conversations. And the big thing, which is what he told me, and this is not to blow smoke up my own butt, it's going to sound like it, is at the wine bar, you know, the Red Red Wine Bar downtown. It's I helped open that bar in 2011, and it was really unique because the whole concept was doing like wine by the glass. They had like 150 different types of bottles.
Oh wow!
But they would do 50 by the glass, like huge, huge selection. So it was really, really cool how you could go in and try all sorts of different kinds of wines and those kinds of things. And it taught me how to like learn about stuff because I knew nothing about wine before mm-hmm. I came in. Like I was just fresh out of college, and you know, I went and ate at Castle Bay, had too long of a lunch when I was job searching, coming back from school. And they were opening the restaurant, and I kind of like meandered in half drunk and saw the owner of the bar. I was like, what's going on here? He's like, I'm opening a bar. I was like, great, I need a job. but I didn't know shit about wine. So like we would close the bar every night the first like couple of months, and we would like sit down at 3 a.m. and have a glass of wine. He would like teach us about the wine and that kind of stuff.
Oh, I love that.
Being able to learn different things. But anyways, yeah. Going back to it, you know, we had tons and tons of wines. So we had 50 of them by the glass, but we had like 100 wines that were just by the bottle. So when one of those wines got out of, you know, started getting old, they would do a wine by the glass special. And they would do it at $20 a glass. So like, it wasn't a cheap glass of wine. This is when most glasses of wine were like between $5 and $8.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like super expensive. And the reward was, which was genius, because they didn't pay us anything extra, but they would, whoever, either do competition, you know, you'd count how many glasses you sold, and whoever sold the most amount of glasses would get a bottle to take home. So it'd be like, oh yeah, you get a really nice fancy bottle of wine. So for like people in, you know, 20, 21, 22, we're like,
I'm making sangria.
This is amazing. Exactly. Like, this is amazing.
This is the best sangria ever.
Yeah. I don't need a bonus. Just give me the bottle of wine, you know? And but that's what we did. So you learned, you know.
So you were able to pivot. Like,
we learned how to sell.
You learned how to sell.
We learned how to take something that, okay, we need to, this is the thing that we want to do. And we need to be able to work with our, work the people. And if somebody wants a glass that's something else, then fine. But if what they want to drink kind of checks the box of the, you know, the expensive wine by the glass that we're trying to sell, let's go after it.
Yeah.
Interesting. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, I have so little experience in the sales piece of the puzzle, and I feel like you couldn't have had much before you started. But I guess.
Au contraire.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, yeah. No. I had a remodeling company for 20 years. Yeah.
Oh, okay, really?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's more expensive than a glass of wine.
A little bit.
Now my knees don't work. My ears are broken.
Okay. Yeah. You weren't listening anyway.
Yeah. Huh?
Okay. That's very interesting. I can weirdly see the correlation, which I didn't think I was smart enough to be able to figure out, but I've got it. I'm there. So did you do any boating before you started selling boats?
No, I did not.
Wow.
My parents, so I grew up in Crofton, which is like 20 miles out of Annapolis.
Mm-hmm.
But my parents were both Midwesterners. Like my dad was from Wisconsin, my mom was from Nebraska. So you know, we had one neighbor, like our next door neighbor had growing up. It was something like a Grady White, or maybe like an old Bertram.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, a Bertram.
I was so young and had no idea what I was looking at. I don't know what it was, but it was one of those types of boats. And I remember we went out on it like twice and went fishing, but that was the majority of my boating experience. Then I went to school out in Nebraska, which, you know, is...
So this isn't an unusual story for most of the brokers that I know, then, like, that very few brokers are the psychopaths that you and I are, where we grew up on the water, like, just snorting brackish water as often as we could.
Oh yeah.
And I don't think it's a bad thing, because I think if anything, it helps people, because most people that are buying boats are not, they haven't been on the water their whole lives.
Correct.
They're not.
Yeah.
You know, if you have been on the water your whole life, you probably don't want to buy a boat because you know better.
Oh no, it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing.
And so it's, I think that's a very common story for brokers in the industry, that like, this is something exciting to do, but it's not what you grew up doing.
Yeah, I think most brokers fall into one of really just two categories. First ones are like people like myself who like didn't, you know, like wasn't into boating, or maybe like they did something else and just bought a boat to be a recreational boat owner and fell in love with boating and decided that selling boats would be a cool thing to do, and just gravitated into it. Or guys who were just, you know, gravitated towards sales and somehow got finagled into it and fell in love with it. That's the thing with boating, is like, yeah, once you get into it, you just, you fall in love with it.
Obsession.
Yes.
or the other category are like the really old hat people who just can't imagine doing anything other than being in the marine industry, and they end up getting into brokerage, getting into brokering boats.
Interesting.
Over the years, you do end up, I mean, if you're not in the sales aspect, but you're just in the boating in general, it's a huge network that you create.
Yes.
Unknowingly. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. you don't go out to do that, but then you end up bumping into people at boat shows in Miami and Annapolis and Newport and Fort Lauderdale and wherever else. And then you sit back and you're like, holy cow, I know a ton of people in, but, and it does, especially for the three of us, makes a lot of sense. Like,
oh, yeah.
When you step back and look at it in that regard, I didn't do any of that pre-calculated thinking.
Well, no, but it works out.
Like, it does work out.
That's always been my challenge, is developing, and this is probably not going to sound the best, but like developing that good old boy network of like people who are just on the water, surrounded by the water. Like you said, your family was in the industry before. And
you've been a captain
forever.
Like, you're friends with me now.
Exactly. Like, you decide you want to do something, but like that's always been like showing up. It's like, oh, I'm selling a boat that's got Detroit diesels in it. Who do I, like, I got to call like 15 people to find someone who's going to take the time to actually listen to what I say, which is to find out that I don't know anything about what I'm talking about.
Right.
And then two, to take the time to actually help my customer, because there's a huge lack of professionals in the industry. So, you know, it's always tough to find good help.
So if you're listening to the audio only version of this podcast, I should explain to you that we are at Davis's Pub in Annapolis. In Eastport,
The Maritime Republic.
The Maritime Republic of Eastport, which is part of Annapolis, but right, don't tell them I said that. And it's this fabulous divey sailor bar, and I'm obsessed with it, and it happens to be a fantastic place to meet
it
other
is.
Nautical folk. But it also happens to be outside where anything can happen, like a Vespa going by, which is what that noise just was. A Vespa. That's so Annapolis. It's like,
right?
It's very Eastport. It only would have been more Eastport if there was like a dog sitting in a little basket in the front, and then somebody else complaining about a zoning issue following behind them. Those would have been like, that would have, if that would have taken the cake.
And they live three doors down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's going to take them longer to drive around the block to get to their house than it
it's
will
a
just
one
to
way.
Walk back to the house.
You can't go that way.
And our bartender is fantastic.
Oh,
our
fantastic.
Server, thank you so very much. How's everybody doing?
I'm good.
Hi. He's doing. I need another beer. More beer, please.
Yeah, it'll open you up so I can ask you more questions about how to get a deal on a boat.
Oh, God. I'm fine with that. I'm good. Thank you.
So, okay, you're in a. It's high dollar. I mean, tell me how much that Prestige was that I was looking at.
So the X60 that was all you guys were on
with those bells and whistles.
That was full retail, about a $3.6 million yacht.
Ooh.
So we sell it for, you know, a little over three.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, we do new and used, so we do tons of brokerage transactions, but all together, our average transaction right now on a 12-year or a 12-month rolling average is about 1.2.
Okay.
Right now. So it's not like super high up, but it's not.
That's a lot of boats though, then, when I think about it.
Well, ironically, it's really not. I mean, when you...
For the bay.
Well, for the bay, yeah. Yeah, and that's... We've always focused on being more, like, streamline-focused about fitting that niche of just the larger yacht customer.
Right.
We've been really successful at it. Like, we've... I started with Josh and Ryan in 2017, and there's been multiple different occasions where we've been approached by manufacturers who do like some smaller boats, and they're like, yeah, we got look what you guys do, sell these boats, and we've reached out to them because these might have been opportunities, and we always come to the conclusion of like, you know, we could get into a smaller boat brand and work that, but it would change how we have to do our business,
right?
Getting into something that's more of a volume brand. So you know, our focus has always been
the $20 glass.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The $20 glass one. I respect that, and I like that.
Sell four glasses a bottle for $20 a piece instead of selling 20 bottles at $4 a piece.
Yeah. This is such a good analogy. I had no idea.
Well, you just came up with it.
Yeah. Thank you. Wow.
I'm oddly impressed.
Look at me being impressed by me. Who knew?
How many natty bows is that?
Well, that's like 8 natty bows here. God, I love this pub. It is such a dive, and I'm making this fabulous yacht salesman hang out here.
What are you talking about? This was when I first started. I lived down on Adam Street, which was about 5-6 blocks from here.
Uh-huh.
And it was a thing when I was dating my girlfriend, who's now my wife and mother of my child. This was always the spot, because that's when I was young, dumb, and full of you know what. And I was...
Questions. Full of questions.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Of which so there was only one answer.
Why not?
But, you know, it was one of those things. It's like, struggling to get, when you start out, like it's a struggle to build your book of business and get deals done. And I still remember she was a lobbyist at the time in DC. Cool. Every time I sold a boat, I would text her and be like, going to Davis's tonight, sold a boat.
Yay! Oh, yeah. That's so exciting.
She'd drive in and we'd sit down at Davis's and
have a good
untold
time.
Amount of beers and untold amount of fireball shots, because that was still a thing back then.
Yeah.
Oh, the cinnamon headache that I have right now just thinking about it.
Lots of memories in this place. Lots of beginnings of memories in this place. The ends of those memories are a little hazy, but...
That's fantastic.
Right?
What questions do you have?
Mm.
You're like a little too inside baseball, and it makes me worried that you're going to ask something that I'm going to be like, nobody's going to care about that. That's a broker question.
Well, you say that with all of my questions.
True. And if not, then I have a bunch more.
So I guess my question would be, where do you see Prestige moving towards, or do you see a trend that it's moving towards in the next 3 to 5 years?
Yeah, everybody keeps telling me the economy's going to collapse and we're not going to have these yachts anymore. But here's what I know: rich people stay rich.
There's always going to be yachts.
Okay. You know,
yeah.
Unless there is some type of world event that takes all kind of recreational activities and puts it into question.
Right.
You know,
how'd that go for you?
Putin starts popping off, we start shooting nukes, nobody's selling boats.
That's okay. Fair.
That's just the way it's going to be.
Or are you selling boats because everybody's got to hightail it out of here?
Well, that's so prestigious.
I've got a great line of submersibles.
Exactly.
But, so smart.
But yeah, I mean, Prestige is the biggest thing with them is, you know, with their new models, they're kind of diversifying the portfolio a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But the real big thing that they're doing, and Prestige has always been this way in being more forward thinking. You know, they were the first European builder to do the galley in the back. They were the first European builder to put really huge, massive, massive windows and really focus on having that
indoor,
interior
outdoor
volume and that kind of stuff. They've always been really, really good at on those kinds of things. Where Prestige has been doing the most transitioning is when Prestige really first started coming on, which is like basically when CYC started, like 2010, 2011, 2012.
I'm with you on that. That's when you first came on my radar.
Yeah, that's when Josh and Ryan started the business. They were both boat owners, and they're like,
oh, not CYC, I mean Prestige. So.
Oh yeah, well that's when they first came in. I mean, you'll see every now and then in Yacht World, you'll see like a 2006 Jeannot Prestige, which is kind of like whatever, but like the 500 came out in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't really start getting imported into the United States until like 2011, 2012.
It was 2014 that I got to put my hands on my first Prestige and actually captain it.
And that's when things like first came in. So Prestige, like I said, they came into the States in like 2010-ish, and they had to build a dealer network.
Yeah.
So it really wasn't until like 2013, 2014, where they had built their dealer network. They were pushing volume into the United States. Dealers were able to sell boats and things like that. And that's when people really started doing it. And when that was happening, Prestige's, you know, they were still very good quality boats. But their finishes weren't quite up to snuff with a lot of the other main competitors, like Princesses and Azimuts and those kinds of guys. And the price points were very different, too.
Nobody's ever on the same level as Azimut, though, for finishes. Let's just be clear. The Italians are insane.
Well, it's
and none of that stuff lasts in the marine environment.
They're beautiful boats.
They're so gorgeous.
They're beautiful boats.
And I will happily help you with your Azimut refit. Because it needs it. Because it needs it after 5 years.
If you want to have a beautiful boat and have a beautiful time with your beautiful wife and her beautiful friends.
Ciao.
And you want to hire a captain and give him a credit card that your secretary looks at and you never deal with, and his only job is to make sure that you don't deal with any of the crap. And there's plenty of people who boat that way.
Oh, yeah. And I love those guys.
It's like the exact
thing. Yeah, but you do.
I need
me a couple of those guys.
I need a few of those folks.
So going back to it, so like Prestige basically since they really fully established themselves, which was started in like 15, 16, 17. They started making big, big pushes on upping their fit and finishes significantly to the point where, because when they first started out, there was also a significant price difference. Like you were looking at, from just an MSRP standpoint, full retail price, you were looking at anywhere between usually like a 15, 20% price difference between
that's a big difference.
Azimut and a Prestige. It was a big, big difference. Mm-hmm. So people would see like, okay, I could spend this kind of money on something like an Azimut or the L-Class C-Rays that were out at the time, those kinds of things. Mm. Or I could buy a Prestige and it's going to be X amount dollars less and this is what I'm getting. And the shitty thing was that the Prestiges are actually really good boats. They just didn't have the finishes. And they've used, because Prestige is part of that huge group Beneteau, which is like basically anything that's built in France is owned by the same umbrella corporation. Just like Volkswagen Group. Like they own VW and they own Audi and Porsche and Bugatti and Ducati and all those kinds of things. Group Beneteau, they own Beneteau, Jeannot, Prestige, Lagoon. And then they also own Four Winds and Worldcraft and Scarab and a bunch of other stuff.
They own Scarab? I didn't know that.
Mm. Yeah, they bought all the wreck boat stuff back in it's like 2014, 15, sometime around there.
I don't own any of those things you just listed.
Oh, yeah.
Not Madam, one.
Everyone pays homage to Madame Rue at the end of every boat show. But they've done a really good job of increasing the fit and finishes where it's more of a direct competitor at a boat show, basically. And then once a person owns it, they're like, yeah, this boat's 10 times better than what I used to have. But it's still a little bit less expensive. They still keep that price parity.
Okay. Can I ask how many of your buyers are owner operators?
Almost all of them.
Really?
Almost all of them.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, of the boats that, like, if an owner operator was to come to me and ask me what's on your short list for an owner operator, I would put Prestige on the list because I do think that it's not as maintenance heavy as some of the other vessels out there. It's also super user friendly because, good Lord, I step on board one of those boats and I go, joystick, pew.
Yeah.
And I go, sea keeper, pew. and I'm dropping the anchor from the helm, and I'm pulling it back up from the helm. And there's a little camera that tells me everything that I'm supposed to be. It's so easy on my end as an operator.
They're very intuitive, and they are, from a design and engineering standpoint, meant to be that way. Prestige has always focused on their boats being owner-operator boats.
Does anybody get upset that people will think they have training wheels?
Oh, yeah.
About like that? Okay.
Oh, you get people with, this thing has pods.
There's no street cred.
This. I don't need that.
That all the time at a boat show.
Every time they,
does this have a such and such? You think they want to know that, we've got that. They go, I don't need that crap.
I don't want that stuff.
But I bet you. And we always go, but if you don't have to use it, just because it's there, you don't have to use it. But can.
This reminds me of
they usually do. Once they realize, this is
when shit's hitting much the fan easier. And your wife is up to here, and you're like, I could either use this amazing piece of technology that's had decades of research and development and ease her pain,
right?
Or I could sleep on the flybridge tonight. Now, of course, there are some boat owners who would prefer that, so maybe they do that on purpose, but
trying to torture their spouse. I get it.
But no, it really does dumb it down. It makes it really easy for people who have relatively little or even no experience to get into.
I know very capable.
A larger boat and operate it.
Yeah. Right. I know very capable captains who could school me on all kinds of nuance of maritime law and things like that, that are afraid of some of the boats that I'm very comfortable piloting. But because they have spent their entire career with a lot more of this tech than I have. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, I get intimidated by the tech sometimes. And so I sort of understand this attitude of, here's a joystick. Right. I hope you've been playing video games your whole life. So that you know that rotation means the boat spins this way, and side to side means the boat laterally. But also, there is more finesse to it than that. It's not as duh. As people think it is.
Yeah, there's still some seamanship involved.
There is.
Oh, yeah. I mean, being able to finagle the joystick to and how you use it, because you're still dealing with a boat. You're still dealing with...
Mm-hmm. There's no such thing as a brake.
You're still dealing with an extremely, extremely heavy item that is on a rather frictionless surface. And so understanding those concepts and how physics works, there is still a learning curve. It's just a lot less than just having to be able to drive with the sticks.
Yeah.
The other thing is, too, is and this is really cuts down on the experience, is stuff like the pod drives. I see the pod drives because she all has pods. I love pods.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a pod acolyte.
He's a podaholic, what?
Exactly.
Hey. Podcast. Are you subscribed? How dare you?
Yeah, like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe.
Smash,
I don't
smash
know.
The subscribe button.
Ring the bell.
Yeah.
Do the things. I don't care.
But the biggest thing is, and this is where I see the biggest learning curve jump, is you don't have to be a master seaman in understanding the elements to be able to operate the boat.
Mm-hmm.
You're driving a boat with a single screw. Any type of wind, any type of current, you have to understand what it is, what it's doing to the boat, what it possibly is doing, what it could potentially do after the fact, and all the different possibilities of what you can and cannot do depending on what the weather does.
Right.
Yeah.
If the wind starts blowing you in a different direction, or starts blowing you harder than you thought you were, or the current's pushing you more than you've got to either be an absolute master, or you back out of it and try again, or you hit something. with something like the pod drives, it's like, oh, the wind's blowing me harder and I'm moving a little too much further in this direction. Let me just move the joystick over and counteract it. And now I'm good. Now I can keep doing what I was trying to do. That's the biggest thing. It takes all the anxiety out of trying to operate the boat.
And the tech really does open up, from a sales perspective, it really does open up the market to us. I mean, as brokers, because it is, you don't have to have years of experience to operate. I mean, how many times have we said to people who are interested, well, that's a much bigger boat, it's going to be so much harder. And we're always
bigger's
saying
easier.
The same thing.
Bigger's
no, it's easier. It's easier.
Well, and especially nowadays, because I mean, I think it's no news to anybody that prices of boats have gotten much more expensive over the years. Mm-hmm. So you know, there's a lot of people who have a really small boat. They bought like a 20 footer. They've got like a wake boat or something like that, or a, you know, something small. And the thought process of, okay, well, I've got to buy a 20 footer for $250,000 to own for a couple of years, and then buy a 30 footer for $750,000 for a couple of years, and then buy a 40 footer for $1.5 million until I get to what I really, really want. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to have to go through all of those purchases.
Well, let me tell
you, just to develop the experience for it.
I hear
what sucks.
Yes, I hear what you're saying, except that insurance companies are requiring that at this point. So it has nothing to do with what people are buying to like prep themselves. It actually, insurance companies are almost requiring you to do that these days. You have to have owned a vessel for a certain amount of in your size range and only go up by like 10 feet at a time, which frustrates me to no end, because I love encouraging boaters, and they all come to me going, I can't get insured for this, for my dream boat.
Mm-hmm.
I can't get insured for my dream boat. Do you have any idea how heartbreaking that is for me? I hate hearing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I will spend days on the water with these people just so that they can have the insurance captain sign off.
Check the box.
To check the box.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, this boat is easier to use, and the things they're going to do on it are less terrifying and intense. They're only going to be doing 15 knots tops, as opposed to like when they owned their 25 footer that went 50.
And they're skipping across the bay.
That's so much more dangerous. It infuriates me to no end, which reminds me, we do need to get an insurance person on this podcast, by the way.
I got a guy.
Of course you do.
Or a gal.
Of course you do.
No. But no, it is a solid point, because on the flip side of that coin is, yes, you do have a lot of people who are getting into larger yachts, which do not have the prerequisite experience. And, you know, you've seen it ever since COVID. I mean, when COVID happened, you couldn't do anything else other than go boating. So you had a ton of people who purchased yachts and purchased expensive yachts. And, you know, a lot of dealerships don't do a lot of training. Like, again, I'm not going to turn this podcast into like a sales pitch for Chesapeake Yacht Center, but like, we do a lot of training and a lot of delivery and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
There's a lot of dealerships who don't do that much type of training. And there's a lot of brokerage, like in brokerage, it's like used car lot for most people. It's like, oh, you close the deal. Here's the keys. See ya. So you got a lot of people buying really expensive boats, doing really stupid shit, and getting really big insurance claims right off the bat. So insurance companies have really clamped down on it, but they're getting there. Like, I had some customers at the end of last year, they bought a 52 Prestige. They never owned a boat before, but they're very similar. Like, they're in their late 40s, early 50s. They've always had a dream of buying a boat, and they were ready for doing the type of boating that a 50-foot yacht facilitates. They didn't want to get a 20-footer and step up. And we had a challenge with insurance, but we did find an insurance provider that required not just like a certain amount of hours, because, you know, some insurance companies, as part of those proficiencies, like you mentioned, they'll require you to do a certain amount of hours. This company required these people to do a specific training course.
Whoa.
With a specific company. But it was still
with a specific company.
Yes. And I was like, I don't. So I called the company and like, it sounds legit. Like they do, they fly a captain up and they do the training with them and they do all this kind of stuff. And it's not based on hours. So it's not like, it's not drive around with a captain for 40 hours and then you're good to go. It's like you go through this course and have to accomplish these objectives. Okay. And if it takes you 3 days to do, it takes you 3 days to do it. If it takes you 6 weeks to do, it takes you 6 weeks to do it.
Right.
But once you go through the course and they certify it, then they're good to write you off because they think they, you know, their thought process is if somebody's through to the point where they can go through this training course, and they obviously, the insurance company has the faith in the training course school that they're doing things the right way, that that person's going to be proficient in operating the boat and they're not going to be a risk factor. So
limits their exposure.
I think that's going to be, that's going to be the next step on the insurance side is developing more products like that, or
like a driving
like
school
basically
setup.
Yeah.
But for boats, which has long been a complaint.
Oh yeah.
Understandable.
It's always been
because your car can't sink.
Yeah.
Which has always been my thing. Like,
I don't know. Cars go a lot faster than boats. I think cars are way more terrifying, and I'm always shocked at how many people we allow to have those. I think everybody should boat wherever they're going. It's like, I can avoid you.
I do too.
Yeah.
As someone who sells them, I wish everybody would go boating.
Yes, I concur.
Okay, okay. How are, let me ask you one final question, and that is, how do you feel about the fact that boat brokers have a stigma against them?
I don't know. Let me finish. Let me start this next
year. No,
that's a fair. That's a fair.
Stand
way to start
by.
How do you feel, Ed?
How do I feel?
Yeah. That I give you hell and everybody agrees with me.
Everybody, huh? Everybody. Oh, yeah. Everybody. Oh,
yeah. Except Ian, but he doesn't count.
I can't control what everybody else does.
Oh.
I can only control what I do.
Okay.
So
that's a very good way of saying it.
I try and do every deal better than I did the last one.
Okay, so begrudgingly, I acknowledge that when you start looking at larger vessels with more equipment on them, unless you are me and have my husband to do your inspections for you and to check these boats out ahead of time and already have, you know, been intimately familiar with everything about every vessel ever, you probably need a broker to help you get through the process. Because it's not a small undertaking to buy a 50-foot boat.
Correct.
It's not. And you, odds are, if you have 50-foot boat money, your primary job is not anywhere in the marine industry.
That is very true.
So with that in mind, I understand the value of having a broker.
Right.
Like, I wouldn't buy a house without a broker. Somebody to hold my hand and tell me what the next step is.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't buy a 50-foot yacht without a broker. And I hate that.
You heard it here first, folks. Yeah.
Captain Boomy said, use a broker.
Use a broker.
But no, I think you bring up a really good point in that, and I see it a lot, especially with my book of business. When you're dealing with customers who are yacht purchasers, and you're at that level on the economics side, There is a certain level of professionalism that is expected.
Yeah.
Done by people who are working with them. They deal with that in every aspect of their life. You know, from what they do at their business that's earning them the money to be able to afford a large yacht like that, to the people that are building their houses, to the attorneys that they're working with all the time because they're dealing with high-end stuff like that, to the guys who are selling them their cars, to the people who are working at the hotels that they stay at.
Right.
Like, just, it's a different level of expectation. And I think the big challenge that we've always had in the marine industry is just you know, the marine industry, the boating industry, it's an industry of fun. Like, it's, we gravitate to it because it's a fun thing to do. We're outside, we're in the water, there's, you know, there's alcohol involved. Like, it's
a $1 million boat, but we're still drinking beers and in our bikinis.
Yeah, it's a fun thing. And that, because of that, the marine industry tends to lure a very eclectic group of individuals to work in that industry. And sometimes professionalism may not be their forte.
Right. A wordsmith.
Well said.
A wordsmith.
Well said. Folks. Like, here. That sounds like a fabulous place to end this thing. This has been the Funny Boat Podcast. Go find Ian. Ian, what are your socials and stuff?
I only have one social. It's Instagram. And it's, I know. I'm an old soul. Don't deal with social media that much. But I do have an Instagram. It's called at Your Yacht Broker.
Ooh.
And that's.
But you can also find him at Chesapeake Yacht
Center. You can
also find
me at Chesapeake Yacht Center, 410-693-7386. Feel free to give me a call.
That was terrifying.
Not that I've ever done that before.
Right.
So, yeah.
All right. Bon voyage, y'all.
Cheers.
Thank you.